Welcome, listeners, to the next installment of Back at the Start. This podcast is a discussion between the fans of the tabletop live play series Kolok 1991, which usually broadcasts on Mondays on twitch.tv/hyperrpg, but is currently on a hiatus due to the coronavirus pandemic. I am one of your hosts, Gaia CA, and I am joined today by my fellow host, Kid Anon. Today, we'll be taking a break from our usual episode discussions to bring you an interview with a member of the Kolok family. Monica Magana is a Latin artist and illustrator based in Vancouver, Canada, who is currently working at Wild Brain on the Polly Pocket animated series. She has contributed to a number of projects in the past few years, including work in the Strange Adventure supplement of Kids on Bikes RPG system, as well as illustrations of both characters and non-player characters for Kolok 1991 and other hyper RPG shows. She has also guested on Kolok playing the CIA agent Purple in season one episode called Clocks. Welcome to the show, Monica.
Thank you. Lovely to be here with you all.
It's always fun having people from behind the scenes on the show. Mm-hmm. Give us all the scuttlebutt.
Not sure how privy I am to secrets, but I definitely know a lot about each character.
Don't worry, we will bribe you as much as we can to get all the secrets. And, you know, hey, if we get something here and there that we can't put out there, great. You know, let's, you know, have fun with that.
An insert redacted part here.
You found yourself back at the start.
Well, I'm really glad you could join us. Did you want to talk a little bit about how you just first got into art in general, maybe?
Yes. It's a long, long story. It started a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I had always had a penchant for drawing ever since I was little. My mom tells stories of me carrying around my box of crayons and my coloring books wherever I went. I think it was around, it was about 10 or so when I started, like, really starting to get into, like, learning how to draw. I remember there was kind of a little, like, art studio, like an after-school kids art studio around where I lived, and started taking some classes there. Then I would always have my mom take me to the bookstore, and I would sit in the art section forever, just looking through as many art books as I could. Go-tos, a lot of the early, you know, how to draw manga books that were out there, and I would always, you know, beg my mom to buy me them so that I could practice at home. So it just kept going up until I finally was able to go to an arts high school. I attended the Orange County High School of the Arts, where I was in Visual Arts Conservatory. So that's really where, like, it all started to, like, really solidify. And then I went on to art college, to the Laguna College of Art and Design. All of these are in California. And now I've moved up to Vancouver and I'm working in the animation industry.
That's so awesome that you were able to get into an art program as early as high school. I know that not everybody and not everywhere has that option.
Yeah, no, I was super lucky because obviously, like, in Los Angeles, there were two art schools for high school. One was on the same campus as the Los Angeles College that's there. It's not like the UCs. It's, so there was, like, the LA one and then there was the Orange County one. I did for the Orange County one. But yeah, I was super lucky. You know, my parents were super supportive of my art, which, you know, like, a lot of people don't get that. And it's really, like, sad when parents don't allow you to cultivate your art. But they were very good about that. And they let me go. So here I am.
That's great. And yeah, it really makes a difference when you have parents who support whatever it is you happen to be interested in. Especially if it's art, because yeah, art isn't always supported.
Yeah, I got
it. All right, so I got a question. You mentioned manga. You know, I'm a huge anime fan. What anime manga inspired you to draw? Like, what were some of the things that you enjoyed drawing anime in manga wise?
Well, I think that kind of goes back to Pokemon for me, because that was my first, like, personal video game. Because, like, I grew up with, obviously, like, the family had, like, an N64. And a Super Nintendo that we used to play on at my grandparents' house every now and then. But, like, the first time that I played video games for myself was when I got a Game Boy when I was about 5 or 6 years old. And then, obviously, when the anime came out, and, you know, back then it was just a cartoon to me. I didn't really know that it was anime. I just knew that it was a cartoon and it had all the Pokemon that I liked. So that's and then that was actually, I can remember, one of my first real efforts in drawing and wanting to draw properly was a one of my friends had a how to draw Pokemon book, and I remember going through and trying to learn how to draw through that, and you know, doing the early kid tracing to learn the shapes and everything. And then it wasn't until I was about 14-ish that I learned what manga was and anime was. And that's when I started looking for those, you know, looking at those, like how to draw manga books. And then I started reading manga, and I think I didn't really have anybody around me that like pointed me in a direction. It was more so like whatever I saw in like the manga section that kind of popped out to me. There's a lot of like kind of magical girl stuff, but nothing really like super mainstream. They're all like kind of like one-off type runs. Things that only had like four parts to them. And even now, like I don't really remember them too well. But I kind of liked more of like the, you know, the teen romance-y kind of stuff. But now I do, like I have My Hero Academia and a few others that I've gone through. I think I read through some of Uran High School Host Club and that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, like, and again, like I didn't really have, early on, I didn't have anybody telling me, like there's this whole thing in art school about, like, teachers kind of, like, dragging on manga and anime and, like, the styles and telling you not to draw it. But it was great to learn, like, the initial, like, proportions of the human body and stuff like that in kind of, like, a simplified way. It was a great teaching tool.
Yeah, I'm really glad to hear that you didn't encounter that negativity, because I have other art friends who have, you know, got that thing from art teachers where they look down on the anime manga kind of style, which isn't, you know, very nice.
It might be that, you know, like I did kind of leave the manga style behind at a certain point, because I do remember once I actually got to art schools that I was very much more interested in realism and trying to learn like a proper form and lighting and that kind of stuff. So like manga wasn't like my main style that I would go to for my projects in school. So, I kind of liked manga, and, like, when I was doodling little, like, you know, kind of more for myself, I would do that, but usually for, like, my art projects, it was very kind of more traditional, so they never clashed for me.
Well, that's nice, and it's good that you were able to sort of follow whatever interested you as you went through all that.
Yeah.
So, I guess we can jump into what got you into doing art for Kolok?
That's a long. All of these answers are going to be long.
That's okay.
So I have a friend who has a friend who has a friend. Okay, so I'm actually really good friends with Chris Bramante.
Yep.
Who has been on a lot of my brochures. I met him. I think it was my sophomore-ish year of college. Because I went to my very first art show in Los Angeles was a Buffy tribute show. Like it was like a Joss Whedon tribute show, and I had done some like Buffy and Dr. Horrible sing along blog. Like I did some fan art for that. So like I was showing some artwork there, and then that's where I met Chris. And so then I started, you know, going to see his improv group. And then he just kept kind of linking me up with more and more people as the years went on. And I remember when he first kind of started to do some stuff on the Gauntlet with Zach and some other stuff with Matt. And he kept telling me about this awesome, you know, Twitch channel. Hyper and all the stuff that's going on, and they do some really cool stuff, and they're really into comics, and you should, you know, do stuff with them, and so he was just trying to kind of look me up and see if I could, you know, somehow weave my art into there. And so I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. And at the time I was already living in Canada, so it wasn't quite as easy for me to just pop down there. But then the next time that I actually had the chance to kind of go down to LA, that's when I first met, I came down to the house and met Zach and everyone there, and we talked for a bit, and I just kind of hit it off, and then I don't remember what it was, because I had done some fan art for some of the shows that Chris was on.
Yeah, he was the host of Gauntlet, as you mentioned, and yeah, he was on a few other things as well. He also did a few singing things on Hyperdrives and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was, there was one show in particular he was doing with Matt that I did sort of doing some fan art of, and then when I posted that, some of the other members of the Hyper community on the chat kept saying, oh, you should do something for the, because at the time the Vanquished fan art thing was happening too, and I was just, and they're like, oh, you should do Vanquished fan art, and I'm like, I don't know what that is, but I'll try. And so then I started watching Vanquish, and that's kind of what really, like, where I really, like, latched on to Hyper as, like, starting to watch it was through the Vanquished series. And so I did a bunch of fan art for that as well. And then from there, there was, I think it was the LGBTQ Pride t-shirt that I did the design for with the unicorn and the rabbit. Yes, Zach just kind of reached out to me and was like, hey, we want to do something for Pride. I was wondering if you could work on this t-shirt design for us. I'm like, yeah, totally.
Yeah, I have the pillow of that design. I love that design.
Yeah. It's really fun. So, yeah, so that's kind of where it all started with the.
For newer thumpers who might not know, Valiant Vanquished was a superhero RPG that Zach GM'd before he got into the horror stuff of Ten Candles and Kolob.
Yeah.
It was. I really enjoyed it.
That show was amazing.
I really liked Zach's GMing style, too. So.
Yeah, for sure.
Kid, did you have any other questions about the Kolob art?
All right. So, yes. Kolob art. One of my favorite ones is clearly Billy.
Yeah.
The way, like, you know, Lucas somehow has a way to just be this, like, able to play this carefree, just kid, and just, like, so much fun. I mean, I love the Billy, I love the Billy art. What was your favorite? Like, what was one that, like, when you heard it, and I know you do a lot of fan art, so, like, outside of, like, maybe the official stuff, what was, like, one of your favorite things you like to do in terms of, like, characters drawing for the show as, like, a fan of it?
Yeah, I mean, Billy is always kind of my favorite one to draw.
He's wonderful chaos.
He's kind of like that, he's that kind of quintessential, like, 80s kid kind of personality that's, like, it's just so, like, jubilant and, like, expressive and... just gets into any kind of mess. But as far as fan art, I kind of touch a range because I'm into gaming, I'm into animation, movies, and also, you know, different styles as well. So, like, anything super cartoony to super cinematic and realistic. So, I span a range of, like, character stuff. As far as, like, anything that really stands out, like, right now I've obviously been doing, like, a lot of, like, Critical Role portraits, which have been coming together as, like, a nice series, almost done with the 99 members right now. But yeah, I've been really exploring these, like, portraits that have, like, a lot of, like, texture in the brushes that I'm using digitally. And so it's kind of, like, bringing me back to, like, my kind of more traditional painting roots in that kind of sense. Yeah, anything portraiture is, like, really calls me because that was always, like, a huge thing for me in school. And just something about people and faces and just the such a variety in them that really calls to me. So
I really like the take your...
Yeah, that's usually what I focus on.
I really like your take on Jester that you've been doing lately. I've seen those ones and those are really fun.
Thank you. Yeah.
So another question. You love to do, like you said, draw faces and people in general. And I'm looking at your page. You got a pretty cool background here of a Kids on Bike image that you've done. Can we talk about that, like, in terms of just, like, world building and everything for Kolob? Was, like, Zach has painted so much in terms of, like, the landscape, all the different things. Was there anything, like, for, like, moments that you would like to actually, like, just draw as a whole? Because honestly, this picture that you have here is really dope. So, like, what, like, the fires, the portals, like, what locations, images that you would like to do or maybe have done, we just maybe haven't seen that relates to Kolob?
I did the series of pieces for the Kids on Bike expansion book, the Strange Adventures, which was a series of, like, just kind of header images, and then it was a couple of spot illustrations, which it was mostly emulating the style of the artist that did the first, the RPG book. So it was kind of more following that lead. And then from there, everything that I've done for Golok has been in that same kind of style, because that was kind of like the merging of it, so that people kind of understood the connection of, like, we're using the RPG, we're kind of using that same style. And it kind of fit at the time with, like, the whole, like, comic book style, and, like, kind of the 80s kind of retro look. Could you repeat the question?
Yeah, I was just talking about, like, you know, the way you drew that background was awesome, and I love the connection that you have to the system and the way you're drawing everything as well. And my main thing was, like, with all the juice that Zach has given us, like, in terms of visual elements and whatnot, what was the back, like, what's a location or something like that you would have loved to have drawn, like, on whatever scale, just to kind of, like, portray what Zach is, like, talking about?
Right. Yeah. I would absolutely love to flesh out the world visually a lot more. I know there have been, like, not talks with me per se, but, like, there have been, you know, whispers about, like, you know, trying to find a way to make this into, like, a kind of like a comic series. But I think that's kind of, I mean, unless they have any more plans or connections to get that going, I'm not sure how much that would be feasible. Obviously, because, like, I'm working full time as, like, in animation right now, I don't get to do a lot of what I would like to do for the show. I know when we first kind of brought me on to do the art for the characters, Zach was super gung-ho about, like, you know, like, for me to do, like, key art and, you know, like, kind of little moment illustrations and, you know, as things came along. But it's just, you know, having a 9-to-6 animation job and then trying to catch up with the latest episode and then trying to find time to draw. And obviously I have other freelance stuff going on as well, so every once in a while I would try and sketch something really quick from some of the episodes. Like, in one of my sketchbooks, I ended up doing a colored pencil sketch of, like, two portraits of, like, the night and day kind of figures that were talked about in one of the ones.
I remember that. Yeah, that was great art. I love that one. Night and day fascinate me too. I hope we get to find out more about those characters.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was, like, super fun. And if I had the time, I would be doing more kind of illustrative works of different scenes. And maybe, I don't know, we'll see if I can fit it in. I'll definitely try for it. I definitely want to kind of illustrate kind of those original, like, towers that were, like, those,
yeah, the two towers,
those towers that those were really intriguing to me. I kind of want to see how I can play with that a little bit more. As far as anything else, I think the library, that, like, one of the early episodes of, like, the library and, like, the crazy shit that went on in there, like, the dreams and, like, the visions and that kind of, like, almost like little microcosm of what was going on in there, that would be really cool to do.
Yeah, our poor librarian had some issues.
Yeah, and, like, I did, like, a couple of sketch, like, the sketch of, obviously, when the dear old agent
Bucket,
he was tragically bumped off.
poor Bucket.
No, not Bucket.
Mm-hmm. I think it's amazing that you got to do the art for that supplement book. That's pretty nice. And then you got to also do the thing that all of us dream about, which is you got to actually play a character on the show, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was super fun.
And such an intriguing character. I think chat would be very interested to see more.
Yeah, that was a highlight.
But yeah, I'm
surprised at how much, like, everyone really enjoyed that character, because it was just like, I'm just going to be like a weird side character that's going to pop in for a few minutes and then be out. But, like, I was thoroughly surprised and endeared at how much everyone loved that character. And I think, obviously, because, like, I haven't done a lot of on-screen, you know, like, acting improv work.
Yeah, being in front of the camera.
So I wasn't really sure how that was going to come off. Yeah, I mean, I did, you know, some improv in high school, and I'm not really camera shy. I grew up kind of in, like, my mom was an executive producer, so I was kind of around sets a lot and cameras and here and there. So, like, that wasn't really an issue for me. I just didn't know if I had really any skill in actually, like, playing a character in that kind of way. But I enjoyed it, and it seemed like people enjoyed it, and I would love to come back if the stars align.
Well, yeah, chat really, really enjoyed those two characters, and we actually, you know, we don't know that much about them, so I'm sure everybody would love it if you were able to come back and do more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was definitely a lot of fun. Like, the way you guys bounced off of each other in that moment was amazing. And speaking of playing RPGs, like, was there any other RPGs that you played besides, like, the Kids on Bike System that, like, what got you into RPGs, if, you know, if you ever did, or was this your first time?
So I got into RPGs probably the most unusual way possible. Again, through a bunch of friends that knew some friends. I had been storyboarding for kind of live action commercials and you know, films when I was in LA. And then even when I moved up to Canada, like, I still have, like, a lot of freelance clients that come and be like, need some storyboards for this or that, or, you know, here or there, or whatever. And it's usually just small little, like, commercials and ads and stuff that they need boards for. And one time, I had already started watching Geek and Sundry back then, because obviously Chris and the whole Robot Teammate crew was doing, you know, some stuff on there. And I had gotten this email from Geek and Sundry asking if I could do storyboards for something. And I was like, yeah, sure. And I'm like, oh, do you guys know Chris? Because, you know, that's who I know, Geek and Sundry. And they're like, yeah, we know Chris. And so then I started talking to the director, and we did our storyboards and blah, blah, blah. And then it just so happened that it was the main two people that were acting in the ad were Ivan Van Norman and Erica Ishii, I think it was. And so apparently Ivan had seen my illustrations for the storyboards for the commercial. And then he called me he emailed me after that. And said, "Hey, I have a friend that's getting married, and we need some illustrations for like a RPG card game." And I was like, "Okay, sure, that sounds cool." And then he was like, "Another weird connection is that he had kind of just come off of doing like a lot of stuff with an illustrator for like his kids' book, the ABCs of RPGs." Well, the guy that did the illustrations for that was my teacher in college. I had him for environment design. And so when he saw my storyboards, he saw my name, and he had talked to Caleb, my ex-teacher. And my ex-teacher was like, yeah, she's cool. She does a lot of great work. And so then Ivan was just like, yeah, they said you were cool, so I want to know if you can do these illustrations. And I'm like, yeah, I can do that. And so it was a shit ton of drawings for a ton of cards, and they ended up being for Bashir's wedding. And at the time, I had no idea who that was. I remember I was working on them kind of, you know, intermittently, and then I had a friend who at work who was super into D&D and tabletop RPGing, and I had never even, like, it never even crossed my mind before. So I was telling him about the project I was working on, and he's like, oh, that's cool. And he's like, who's it for? And I'm like, oh, it's for this guy, his wedding. His name is, like, Matt Mercer or something. And he's like, Matt Mercer? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, do you know who that is? And I'm like, not really. He's like, have you ever watched Critical Role? And I'm like, no. And he was like, do you want to play D&D? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I had always been, a video game person growing up. And the only RPG-ish games I had ever played were JRPGs, so like Kingdom Hearts and Final Fantasy. And Pokemon obviously was like an RPG, but like when I was little, I didn't really understand that it was an RPG. So like I never really thought I was an RPG player until recently. And so then once like my friend kind of like was like, well, if you're thinking about D&D, he's like, you know, you should watch Critical Role. And so he kind of started me watching Critical Role. And then I was like, oh, okay, sure. But, like, I couldn't follow along. It just seemed so complicated and, like, it just seemed like such a huge thing to try and fit in my brain that I was like, I don't know if I could play this. Like, I don't even know if I could roleplay. Like, I don't know. I was really scared. And so he was just like, no pressure. He's like, if you want to join a game, he's like, I can fit you into my campaign. We've got about 2 or 3 players. And so it took me about like 4 months to get up the courage to play my first D&D game. And then it took about another 2 months for me to be comfortable with it. And then obviously Kolok was my first time playing an RPG on screen or in front of a camera. And then at that being live, it was so it was a little nerve wracking, but you know, after having been playing D&D for about 1.5 years, I kind of had an idea of how to do it.
Well, that's cool. I'm glad you got to try RPGs, because I know it can definitely be intimidating for new people at the start, because it seems like a lot. But usually, once you actually start playing, it sort of fleshes out.
Yeah, and I was actually really scared because of, you know, all I had ever heard was that, you know, it's a boys' club, and you know, it's very like, you know, there aren't a lot of groups where there's a lot of girls, and which was false by the time I got there, you know, to it. These are kind of like old ideas that had been bouncing around for a long time, but I was just like, this seems like a very intense thing that guys are very intense about, and if I don't really want to crash anybody's game or whatever, but like I found a really great DM with a really great group, and I got to play in that campaign for a little bit, and then I moved on to a couple of different campaigns now that I have super great group of friends that I play with, and it's very it's much more open than I had initially thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's great when you can find a good group that fits with you well, and everybody's comfortable playing together. It really makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our audience actually put in a whole bunch of questions on Twitter, so I think we should probably get to some of our Twitter questions. If I think Kid Anon is going to read some of them.
Awesome.
All right, all right. So this is from Shadows Maki.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of info does Zach give you to get ready for the character?
This one is for Purple.
Yeah, I think for playing Purple.
Sounds like it, definitely, yes.
Yeah, so I got an email about maybe 2 hours before we went live about this character. And it was about maybe 4 or 5 paragraphs long. Yeah, about 4 paragraphs long. And it basically just kind of gave me an idea of, like, what kind of relationship this character has with the other character, Yellow, obviously, because we're going to be a duo. It was, again, it was very, like, kind of last minute, because he hadn't, like, when we were starting to try and put this together, he wasn't sure what date the finale was going to land on, or, you know, part of the story they were going to be at by the time I was going to be in town. So it was very, very on the fly of like what he was able to put together, because he didn't know what was going to be happening for that episode until like the week before. So he just gave me like a kind of just like a rundown of like, this is who she is, this is what happened to her, to as to why she is the way she is now. This is how we work together, this is our relationship together, this is how we play off of each other, this is what your powers are. And then some very, like, obviously, like, important kind of bits of information about, like, what was going on in the world at that time, and why it was very important for us do our job as these characters. So it wasn't a whole lot for me, because it was such a vague kind of fast character to put together. But for what it is, there is kind of a lot of information there that could have been played off. But I'm not sure like how relevant it is, because obviously like after this we kind of like jumped back to the like it almost like a parallel universe kind of thing. So like the world that Purple and Yellow are in is, I don't think it's not the same as where we are now in Kolok. Definitely not. So like whether or not Purple and Yellow even are who they are right now is a mystery.
That could be a fun thing for you to play an alternative Purple at some point.
Yeah, for sure.
That was definitely fun. And this is a question for myself. Yeah. Who was your favorite person to like play off of in that short time that you have in the as Purple? Like, because you were there in season one, if I'm not mistaken. So you had Andre, Megan, Shubble, Lucas. Like, who among the crew was like either just made you laugh out loud or just kind of like took you aback from like how good they were in terms of acting and whatnot?
I was actually surprised at how much interaction I ended up having with Megan as Sky, because I wasn't sure who it was going to be that I ended up connecting with in that moment and being able to play off of. Obviously, Zach was the one that was kind of like the baseline for me. So like immediately it was like between me and Zach, it worked really well, and so like I really like started to really get the energy from Zach, and then all of a sudden when Megan started reacting, that was where like my character started reacting back, and it just kind of started like the snowball effect of increasingly like she was getting frustrated with Purple's answers, and Purple was getting frustrated that she couldn't get answers out of Sky, and it just kind of built up into that crescendo where she's like, I think she said something like, do you want me to punch you in the face? And I'm like, do you want me to punch you in the face? Because I will do that. it was part of my character to play off of the emotions of the rest of the players in the cast. And I think Megan gave me the most to work with, and therefore that's why that got so energetic.
And yeah, the two, you guys, you and Zach as the two agents, definitely also played really well against each other. That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think because, like, I did take the time to, like, watch through, you know, the Twin Peaks stuff, like, from the beginning to all the way up to the new stuff. So I kind of understood what he was trying to say about, you know, kind of playing off of that quirkiness and style. So I was just kind of following his lead and trying to make sure I was helping that.
That was so much fun. Another one we have from Twitter from DD Heeman. I'm probably saying that wrong. I apologize for everybody out there on Twitter if I say your name wrong. Once again, you can correct me. I'm sorry. So the question was, who is your favorite? The question was, who is your favorite character to draw from Kolok? And we kind of already touched about it, but like, you know, just...
Yeah, it's hard to pick one, too, because it's like they're all my babies, you know? Like, it's hard to pick a favorite, right?
Okay to choose Tibby. We're all okay if you chose Tibby. I'm just saying, I know I said Billy, but Tibby also holds a...
You know, I think I'm not sure if the official artwork for Tibby is my favorite, but definitely some of my fan art. Like, Tibby has made it much more of like a presence in some of the fan art that I've done. So I like playing off of that and like his character. Season one, I would say Sky's character was kind of one of the most fun to work on. Obviously, when we were kind of getting these initial four cast members started, I did stream my process on those, and so kind of, you know, a lot of people did see like my process in creating those characters and going through and you know, from the references and from the player characters themselves, and how we put those together was really fun. The mortician was also one of my absolute favorites. Lexi was a favorite. Freaking, like, Malika's, like, spark. Oh, man. Like, all of these, like, I would get giddy every time that Zach was like, okay, here's the character we're doing this week. Because it was always so fun to see, like, how these characters are coming together and evolving. And even until most recently when we did, like, the FBI agents, you know, like Sky and the crew of everyone, and obviously Matt Mercer's character there, but like that whole like entourage of like Xavier, Matt, Hector, and Sky together, like I think that one was kind of the most fun most recently because it was kind of more of like a grouping, and they all kind of like how they all kind of work together as one piece, and also how they work separately as individual pieces is really fun to me.
Yeah, that episode with the whole group of agents was really, really fun. I quite enjoyed that one.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. So we got another one from Shadow. Yeah. What do you think of the world of Kolok that Zach is building has built so far?
I am just ever in awe of people that can build worlds. Like, my DMs, I like, they're gods to me, and, like, the worlds that they put together are just fantastic and beautiful. And it just is, like, I think if I were forced to do it, maybe not forced, but, like, if I really had to build my own world, I just don't think that I could ever come to, like, the end out of like details and minutia that like really makes the world live, like living and breathing, because like Kolok is such a living, breathing place to us, like, you know, who've been following the story all along. And the fact that it all kind of stems from the 10 candles stuff as well, how he's able to just weave all of that together, and, you know, even when we go outside of Kolok, and, you know, but there's, you know, the stint in Seattle and a bunch of other stuff, but, you know, it all kind of comes back to this world that is so intricate and kind of always moving. Like, it just reminds me of, like, a labyrinth, because it's like all the pieces are always moving and nothing's ever going to stay the same. And the fact that, you know, all these possibilities happening in this town, and how it affects the rest of the world, too. How he's able to think of everything like that is just beyond my my brain power. And I commend him for everything.
Sorry, Australia. We didn't mean to destroy you.
All right. We got another one from... Okay. No Dead Dads. No Dead Dad in 91. yes. So, do you know who employed Purple and Yellow? If you know and Zach won't tell, and Zach won't yell at you, love you and your work.
I think this one is pretty well known. Maybe they're asking about maybe if there's someone higher than the initial organization, but we were CIA agents. Which were kind of like a bit of this adversarial to the FBI agents so far that you know, have been floating around in Kolok. But as far as like outside of the CIA, I don't know that. I don't know if there was a further entity that was taking charge of that, but like obviously because we like in the FBI there was like a little like Harmony thing going on and, you know, other people kind of taking charge of that, but as far as we know, we were just agents of the CIA. We had gone on a mission and something happened and we had powers when we came back, and they were using us to find out what was happening in Kolok. That's as far as I know is of who was employing us.
So, back again with Shadow. If you were to play a character besides Agent Purple, who would it be?
I would love to play a kid at some point, like alongside the crew. Like a character that wasn't quite as like immediately like that they would have such a hostile kind of emotional feeling against, because like when we came in, obviously we were like suits and we were trying to get information out of them, and you know they were in a tough spot, so like they just like the whole cast of them as players like were just immediately very adversarial to our characters, which was exactly kind of what we wanted them to do, but it would be a little bit more fun to be able to play a character that was like more that they didn't see as like such a threat, and to kind of more play along with them. So if that's possible in the future, I don't know, but that would be super fun to do.
That would be fun because, you know, they don't trust adults at all, so
exactly.
That would be a nice little twist to that, see how they, you know, deal with another kid. From
Ambivert Ninja.
What's he got? Thank you. From Ambivert Ninja. As a fellow artist, I can imagine that you would have tons of ideas and inspiration for how a character scene would look like if you were given a written description of them. How do you manage to figure out what works best for your artworks?
I think if we're talking about Kolok in particular, like the style was kind of set from the original, like, Kids on Bikes artwork, that was done in the books. And then there was, you know, making sure we're keeping in line with, like, the time frame. So it was kind of like a mix of 80s comic book style mixed with like this kind of vintage feel, kind of more vintage illustration-y feel. So that was kind of my inspiration and kind of the thread that ties all of the Kolok art together. As far as like other artwork outside of Kolok, it's just finding like what it's the same thing as like trying to figure out a character for your RPG, no matter what game you're playing, like trying to figure out what works best for what kind of story that you're trying to tell. So like obviously when I play my character in my characters in D&D, I have to think about like, well, is this something that the player or that this character like it doesn't make sense for them. So it's kind of the same thing with art. You gotta see like what is the intention of the art. What kind of story are you trying to tell? How is the style lending to that story? Is it more whimsical? Is it appealing? Is it gritty? Is it, you know, gross? You know, like everything has its place. So you just kind of got to nail down, like, what is the intention of this artwork? And then obviously, like a lot of the poses and the facial expressions in each of these character portraits that I do for Kolok, they tell a story by themselves. Based on the characters that I'm, like, the character descriptions that I'm given, and what their intentions are. So that's kind of my process on that.
All right, sweet. Man, Shadow wants all the answers.
He does.
Once again, from Shadow's Maki, we have, do you have any theories about anything in Kolok 1991?
I think this one was the hardest question that I looked at, because everything that I have like had theories for like kind of keep getting like blown out of the water, like the directions that Zach and the crew take Kolok in are so like unexpected, and it's just keeping you like on the edge of your seat and wondering what's going to happen next and how can this possibly work out or work through. And this one's kind of more of a meme and a joke than a theory, but my theory was that he was going to have Bucket kind of die in each and every kind of season, and that he would keep bringing him back and keep killing him. But I'm not sure how true that was. I don't know. It's I kind of felt like that's where that was heading, but I'm just kind of along for the ride. I'm kind of a person, like, I don't mind spoilers and I don't mind being sold on things, but I also don't like to actively seek out things that will cause me to not enjoy what's happening. Like, I have a lot of friends that are constantly asking me, like, oh, what's your theory on what's happening? I'm like, I kind of just want to go along for the ride and see how this plays out. Like, that's more fun to me than trying to, like, build up, you know, massive theories that will probably end up in disappointment when, you know, when things don't go the way that I imagine them. Or at least that's kind of what I see a lot in media nowadays, is people, like, build up these things, like, they know exactly what's going to happen, and then they end up being like, well, it didn't turn out that way, so now I'm disappointed. And it's like, I would rather just enjoy the story that someone is telling me than try to, like, piece things together. And also because it's like, there's, like, especially with this story, it just seems like there's so many ideas and, like, kind of more scientific ideas that I'm not really that, you know, super super intelligent about. So, like, I don't really know much about, like, multiverse theories and how parallel universes react and, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's like, I'm more like an interpersonal person with, like, between characters and, like, seeing, like, how those character relationships work out together rather than, like, how the world works. So I'm along for the ride.
Yeah, that's something I definitely enjoy about Kolak, is that I often have no idea where it's going.
Mm-hmm. I think with Kolak, it's hard to create a theory. Because, like, mm-hmm. especially if you create a theory online and Zach is, like, reading it and he's like, huh, interesting. he can just, like, swerve us into a different direction. But then there's also the players, which is the great thing about RPGs, is, like, you're kind of at the mercy of the players to make a certain decision. Zach multiple times said, hey, I tried to guide them this way, but they decided to make a U-turn and go back, or you know, go left.
Exactly.
That's the fun thing, is theorizing is definitely the most difficult for the show.
Yeah.
So, Mel Primino's asks, are there any characters in Kolak you haven't made art for yet, but would love to make?
You know who? The centipede lady. Oh, I really want to enjoy her.
Cassandra.
Not the creepy. Oh, no, not the creepy one.
Yeah, that one. I really want to. I wonder what Zach would give me as far as, like, a descriptor. I mean, I know we've had, like, descriptors of her in the show, but, like, I kind of wonder exactly what he would give me, and, like, as far as anything extra to kind of play off of for her, and, like, how we would put that together. And yeah, that would be a fun one. And, like, obviously, like, it's not official artwork, and they were never actually meant to be, like, full-on characters before, but night and day, if those actually end up being, like, full-on characters, I have something to start with already, but I really want to see how we can push those designs even further. And then there is actually one character that I have illustrated that has never been used. So,
ooh, secrets.
That's a fun one. Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta admit that Cassandra creeps me out. So I think if I saw art of her, it would probably not do me good. I would probably have a nightmare from that.
Oh yeah, Cassandra, man, she. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have another one from Draconics.
I think it's Draconics.
Okay, so this is going back to Purple. Will Purple make a return, or rather, do you want Purple to make a return?
I would love Purple to make a return. As far as will they, that's really up to Zach and how we can weave that into the story and my ability to be in the. I think obviously now that, you know, everyone's kind of zooming in and video conferencing and all that might be a possibility, but that's really up to Zach. Again, I really don't know what those characters would be in this version of Kolok that we are in now. I'm sure it would be something equally as crazy as if they were to begin with. But yeah, I'm super down if Zach wants to do that again. I would be more than willing.
That would be cool. I just love the fact that we have different universes in the first place, or you know, not anymore at this point. But so that's the Twitter questions. I know I've asked a few questions. Gaia, do you have anything to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to say too that there was another Twitter question which basically you already answered, which was about what your art inspiration and style was. So I think we already did that. So yeah, my question would be, or one of my questions is, what advice would you give to aspiring artists, people who want to get into art professionally?
My advice is to learn all you can about fundamentals to begin with. That's kind of where I started. Like, obviously, we had talked earlier about like the how-to manga art books, you know. So like, A is find what is interesting to you about art and not what you think you have to do for art. And then secondly, learning the fundamentals so that you are able to do everything that you can. I see too many artists that don't get the opportunity to learn the fundamentals on a deep level. And it just leads to many years of artists just trying to like fight with their own ability to try and make the artwork, that it ends up paralyzing them from being able to actually like pull on, like do things, you know, having those fundamentals down early of like learning, you know, how to draw and how light works and color theory and all that kind of stuff. Like it makes things so much easier when you actually go down to the idea of what you want to create and then executing it. Because when so many artists just kind of paralyze themselves with the fact of, I have this amazing idea, but I don't know how to execute it, it's really like, it just puts a hamper on it. And then the other part too is like, everyone has their niches. So like, if your art style isn't as like, you know, as crazy as, you know, something like the super realistic or, you know, kind of game art, concept art kind of stuff, like there are other avenues of art styles. So just finding those niches of like what's motivating you, learning those fundamentals and understanding how your style can be implemented.
Yeah, I think that works for, you know, most creative endeavors, is that it's really important to get down the fundamentals as much as you can and learn as much about them as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was also
And there's so many great resources out now. Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I was also wondering,
With the internet and everything.
Oh, yeah. And YouTube. YouTube has a lot of really good tutorials.
Yeah, so many great tutorials out there.
I was also wondering if you were able to create your own Kids on Bike setting, what kind you would create.
I was thinking about this earlier, and I think a theme park kind of setting would be cool, like a theme park on a massive scale, kind of more along the lines of something like Universal or like Disney in scale, and like how, like, you know, well produced those things are, like having like a bunch of kids like stuck in like this theme park that starts to like come alive and have all the supernatural stuff going on, like have like any kids like sneak, or like they stay like hidden and like are in the theme park after hours, and it just becomes this like other world where all this stuff comes to life. I think that would be super cool.
That does sound a lot of fun. That, I'm not gonna lie, that would be a neat setting, I think.
Yo, Zach, you heard, lady, come on. Like, I'm sorry, I just heard that, and I'm like, we need this.
That would be awesome.
I'm just saying.
I'm working that one.
And my last question is, what?
Kids and rides.
There you go. Perfect, kids and rides. My last one is, What's your favorite piece of art that you've created that's a favorite of yours from, you know, fan art or whatever, professionally?
Ever. Interesting. That's a tough one. It's not like because it's anything crazy or you know, super flashy or anything, but it was more so just like, I don't know, it was kind of one of the pieces of artwork that really made me realize that, like, it, you know how, like, there's, like, imposter syndrome in, like, a lot of artists and creatives where, like, you don't think that you're really a part of the thing that you're trying to be, or you don't think you'll ever really be what you're trying to be, and that you're just kind of, like, making it up as you go or just floating along. But when I was in my senior year of college at LCAD, I had this one class that was group composition, which was oil painting, but like on a massive, like we were doing like large scale, like paintings, like almost like a figure would be full life. Like that's how big the painting would be. And for that class, the whole kind of last half of it was we had to do like a painting that was at least 4 foot each way. And it had to be at least, I think it was like, it had to be at least two or three figures. So like, you know, people in the painting itself. And I did a 4 foot by 5 foot painting on two panels. And like, I, like, it was one of those things where like, I went and I sourced the wood for the panels myself. I prepped them all myself. With the help of the teacher, I constructed the back brackets and stuff for it to be able to hang later. And then, you know, everything from like, drawing out the idea to sourcing who were going to be my models to really doing like a digital mock-up of what that was going to look like when it was finished, and then using that to like inform this large-scale painting and actually like taking the pencil to this massive canvas and starting to draw. Like it was so overwhelming, but at the same time, like, you know, like I actually saw how like my understanding of how to prepare for this led me to be able to do it. And then it was super simple. It was just a female kind of reclined on a couch, and her head and her hand were wrapped in like these like the kind of like the fairy lights. And then it was another figure, which was actually Chris Bramante, who's one of my models, was kind of like at the bottom of the couch holding a light bulb in one of his hands to the ground. And then another figure behind him at the edge of the other side of the couch that was holding on to, like, he kind of just was, had his like elbows on his knees, kind of leaning over, sitting, and then in his hands was clutched another light bulb. And so my idea was that like the light was emanating from all these pieces that these people had in their hands. And I was painting the light bulb that was on the ground in this painting, and I was living then with my aunt and uncle. And so I was doing this in the garage, and I had like, I only had like maybe like one light on that was kind of dim in the garage as I was working on this one day, and my aunt came into the garage, and she was like, "Do you have a light down on down there?" And like where I was painting near to the ground of the panel, and I'm like, "No," and she's like, "Oh, that's your painting." She's like, "I thought that was an actual light," and the fact that like I had done exactly what I was trying to do was make it seem like the painting itself was lit from within. I think that was like, that's why that's my favorite piece, because it was kind of the culmination of like everything that I'd been working on for years and years and years, I was actually able to put together.
Wow, that sounds amazing. That's a really cool project.
Thanks.
Well, thank you, Monica, so much for joining us today. It's been really good to have you on the show, and I hope you enjoyed talking to us.
This has been super fun. Thank you guys for having me.
Being on and had so much fun.
Thank you to our listeners for joining us, and especially to those of you who sent in questions for Monica. If you have anything you'd like to talk to us about on the show or any comments you'd like us to read, please tweet us at ColocPod or email us at startpod@gmail.com. I've been Gaia CA.
Kidding on.
And we find ourselves back at the start.
You found yourself back at the start.